Blog Talk Radio.
Mode 1.
I want to rock with you.
You are now listening to Upfront and Straightforward with Alan Roger Curry.
The following internet radio show is for mature audiences only. If that means boys and girls, you must be 18 years of age or older to listen.
Up until about the 1960s or early 1970s, premarital sex and casual sex was totally frowned on by society for both men and women. Generally speaking, the vast majority of men and women in society were expected to remain celibate until they were legally married and spiritually joined as two souls in one body. Well, the sexual revolution changed everything. Or did it? On one hand, you have a lot more men engaging in premarital sex and short-term non-monogamous sex, otherwise known as casual sex. But do men experience any societal consequences and/or repercussions as a result of their free-spirited, promiscuous ways? Many would argue for women it is a far different story. Most women who engage in highly promiscuous behavior generally tend to be criticized, labeled, and have moral judgments passed against them. Terms like slut and whore are used quite frequently by members of both genders to subjectively describe a woman who has engaged in sexual enjoyment with more than her fair share of sex partners. My guest for the evening knows all too well what it was like being a young woman hopping from one man's bed to another. Some of her behavior was motivated by a desire for sexual enjoyment and erotic satisfaction, but more so, she was simply motivated by a strong desire to receive male attention on a day-to-day, week-to-week, month-to-month basis. As she got older and matured, she has been able to put her reflections regarding her promiscuous past on paper in very eloquent form, and the result has been an established career as a well-respected book author and novelist. Who is this woman who is bold enough and outspoken enough to open up about her highly promiscuous past so that many other young women who share her similar desires and lustful urges can make sound decisions in their lives? Her name is Carrie Cohen Hoffman, and tonight, Miss Hoffman is not going to mince any words regarding the touchy subject of female promiscuity as she decides to get up front and straightforward with Alan Roger Curry.
Oh my God, is this A. Alan Roger Curry of Mode 1 fame? Oh my God.
You're really good at this.
I gotta ask you, do you feel that black men have some type of unwritten obligation to date and marry someone in the race? You do?
I think they do. I think white people should date white people. I think black people should date black people.
Now, how did you come up with this idea to go to Italy with the women?
With the women, right. I just got so tired of hearing all my male friends talk about Brazil and how great Brazil is for them.
When I was growing up, I would go and hear about black women complaining about white women are stealing our men. Don't complain about your goods being stolen if you casually leave them on the front porch.
Have sex. Enjoy your life.
You know, men really want women to have standards. They really do. And I don't know how we got off of the mark there, but men do like classy women, and they want women to have standards.
I think you can be single and be very, very happy, and I think it's about taking the pressures off about being married.
I'm not saying that you should disrespect a woman. Never disrespect your woman, but the key is to not let her walk all over you.
Romantic love is very volatile. People don't realize it. And it is a drug. People don't realize it. Men and women do stupid things. Not all men, but sometimes you'll do something stupid.
I think it's a turn-on because just to see that person, just to enjoy themselves and just to watch them touching that person and making them feel good, I think that's kind of sexy, actually.
Yo, yo!
one. This is Gerard McClendon from Chicago Tonight and the McClendon Report. Right now you're listening to Upfront and Straightforward with my good friend, Alan Roger Curry. Mode one, let the women know, fellas, what you're really thinking. Ha ha, Alan Roger Curry.
In my mind back into free mode. You won't skirt it, back and observe. I just left a gang of over there on the curb.
Now they got the freaks, and that's a known fact. Before I got jacked, I was on the same track. Back up, cause it's on N-A-T-E-N-E, the woman to the G.
Just like I thought, they were in the same spot, in need of some desperate help. But hey, dog and the G-child were in need of something else. Sexy as hell, I said, ooh, I like your side. She said my chorus broke down and you sing real nice. Would you let me ride? I got a car full of girls and it's going real swell. The next stop is the East Side Motel.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another episode of Upfront and Straightforward with Alan Roger Curry. We're on the Blog Talk Radio, Internet Radio Network, and I'm your host, Alan Roger Curry. And today is Thursday, March 17th, and you just got finished listening to the smooth sounds of the late, great rapper, hip-hop artist, Nate Dogg, who passed away this week at the young age of 41. May God bless his soul. Yeah, that was the jam, Regulate, from the movie Above the Rim with Tupac and Leon and Tisha Campbell's husband, Dwayne Martin. Yes, that was a great movie, great soundtrack. But yeah, Nate Dogg, he's one of the OGs in the hip-hop rap game, and he unfortunately passed away this week, and a lot of his fans were saddened to hear that. Tonight is going to be one of those shows. I can already feel it. It's going to be one of those shows. If you're a regular listener of my show, you know I have some interviews and discussions that are more or less lighthearted in tone. There's some that are just kind of informational and educational in tone. Some that are just really provocatively entertaining and a little bit risque, particularly when I have sex experts, sexologists, etc. There have only been about maybe 4 or 5 episodes over the last 3.5 to 4 years that I've had since I started Upfront and Straightforward where I got just an above average amount of feedback. And, well, no, I shouldn't say that. There's been quite a few shows where I've gotten a lot of feedback, but usually when I get feedback, it's usually positive feedback. You know, complimentary, kudos. There's only been 3 or 4 shows where I've gotten, I would say, just as much, if not more, critical feedback or negative feedback as I did positive feedback. I think the first show I did was when I did a show about black men dating white women. You know, a lot of sisters were up in arms over that show. It was a pretty, at times, contentious discussion. I had another episode where I interviewed Robert Greene, who's the New York Times bestselling author. He wrote a book called 48 Laws of Power, and he has a lot of loyal fans, and they didn't like me challenging him on his principles. And, man, I got some scathing letters from his fans. I mean, some of them actually called me the N-word. I was like, damn, that's deep. But anyway, the last show that I did where I got a lot of, you know, harsh tone type feedback, and I would say most specifically from female listeners, was when I did a show that the subject matter was similar to what it is tonight, which is female promiscuity. I did a show in early March of 2010. It was entitled Soul Ties, Casual Sex, and premarital promiscuity, and how those potentially affect a long-term relationship and a marriage. And I offered some strong opinions during that episode. Some of the arguably the strongest opinions I've ever expressed on any episode of my show. And quite frankly, a lot of women weren't feeling some of my opinions. And they let me hear from them, either through email, Facebook messages, what have you. I predict, I might be wrong, I predict, though, this is going to be one of those episodes. Because for a lot of people, and particularly I say a lot of women, promiscuity is something that's very sensitive and touchy. Women do not really like to discuss their sexual past with men, and a lot of women feel like there's a double standard that is maintained in society as it relates to promiscuity. A lot of women feel like men basically get a green light to be promiscuous and kind of get patted on the back when they exhibit promiscuous behavior, yet they're scrutinized, criticized, insulted, labeled, and judged when they exhibit the same behavior. So that's why this subject tends to be, again, a little touchy, sensitive, or even contentious for some women. Not all women, but for some women. But, when I did it the last time, though, that was what I did under my open discussion format, where I really don't have a specific guest in the house. Whereas this one, I have a specific guest who has written a book about her own experiences as a promiscuous woman, and I will be getting to her in just a little bit. But yeah, again, the last time I did this show, man, yeah, women were lighting up my inbox.
Alan, I used to like you, and you were one of my favorite radio hosts, but you pissed me off in that show where you were talking about blah, 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 and blah, 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 blah.
So, speaking of sex, next week I'll be interviewing a woman who was sort of a pioneer in the field of adult erotic films. Her name is Candida Royale, and she was one of the first women to write, direct, and produce her own brand of adult erotic entertainment for women and couples. Her films had more of a gentle, romantic feel to them rather than a, you know, just a raunchy feel, and she left an indelible impression on her consumers. So I will be interviewing her 1 week from tonight. 2 weeks from tonight, I will not have a live episode. 2 weeks from tonight, I will not have a live episode. That will be March 31st, but I will have another installment of the Erotic Conversationalist. That's more popular among my female listeners than my male listeners. Women love the Erotic Conversationalist. I'm going to be interviewing a woman who goes under the pseudonym Ambrosia Cumming. She's actually a very open-minded, highly erotic married woman, and she wanted to come on my show and share her thoughts about sex, seduction, eroticism, and kinkiness, and I'm sure my female listeners will be particularly interested in hearing what she has to say. And in April, I already got a full lineup, so it's going to be on and popping once I get back the first Thursday in April. That's right. I got a full line of guests, some good guests, so it makes for some good shows. Let me give some love. I love all my listeners. I love all my listeners. But you know I got special love for my chat room listeners. And I really appreciate this first chat room listener I'm about to highlight, because she is the biggest sports fan in the world. And today is the first day of the NCAA tournament. So for her to take time to listen to my show, even though I know she got about three TVs on in the background. But she's in my chat room. Adrian, my girl Adrian, the Ohio State Buckeye fan. Her school is favorite to go to the Final Four. Ohio State Diva, 36-26-36. Diva, 36-20-26-36. She is in my chat room. She has been promoted as my most loyal listener. That's right, used to be Hyper, but it's now Diva. I got Big Dog 83. Woo, 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 woo. Big Dog 83 is in my chat room. I got Black Women Talk. I got Chic Talk. I got Christian Davis. I got D Light. I got Alex, a.k.a. Don Calypso. He's the Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde of Blog Talk Radio. Alex can be the Haitian sensation. That's the one that's loving, supportive, full of camaraderie. Then he's the Haitian abomination. Boy, if you piss him off and you say opinions that are contrary to his, he's going to let you have it. That is Don Calypso. That's right. I got a few guests. I got Lady Taz. Lady Taz is in my chat room. I got Lady Nevea. I hope I pronounced that right. She's in my chat room. I got Miss Diva. I got my girl Sandy, a.k.a. How Elegant. How Elegant. How Elegant. She's actually another person from Columbus, Ohio. Sandy, she's a longtime Blog Talk Radio personality and good friend of mine. I got the Wolf Howls. Is in my chat room. I appreciate all of you being here, particularly, again, those who are NCAA fans, because I know you got a TV or radio on in the background. More special shout-outs will be my brother and ace confidant, Stephen Curry, my cousin, J.P. Jones from Chicago, Athabasca, Maplewood, New Jersey, Christopher Curry, Detroit, Michigan, Philip Pulliam, and his older brother, Irvin William the Third, EVP 3, today is his birthday, so a special happy birthday shout out to my main man, EVP 3, that's right, Nohad, a.k.a. Metal Hayes, Vanessa Turner, Edie Lee Harris, Will Wavy, Mel Hopkins, Sassy Entertainment had a great show tonight. I didn't get to listen, I'm going to have to listen to the archive, but I know my boy, my twin brother, Rael Sims, was on the show. I think it's still going on now. So I want to listen to that show about toxic relationships. But shout out to Sassy. The Bulls are tied for first in the Eastern Conference. That's right. The Bulls. You know I'm a Bulls fan, man. I love me some Bulls, man. Derrick Rose is the truth. He is the truth. I hope they just go all the way. I hope they go all the way to the NBA Finals. As I mentioned, the NCAA tournament started today. Now, I gotta give a little bit of commentary right now. There's been a lot of talk about this whole Fab Five documentary that was on ESPN, their 30 for 30 series. Jalen Rose, if you're not familiar, when he used to play on for the University of Michigan, and he played alongside his teammates, and they were known as the Fab Five, and they had a documentary about them. And within that documentary, he said some harsh words about Grant Hill, who's a professional basketball player who now plays for the Phoenix Suns. But at the time, when he was in college, he played for Duke. Now, I didn't like Duke back in the day. I still don't like Duke, but that was purely on the athletic level. I mean, here's my thing. If you beat my favorite team, I'm not going to like you. Like, in NFL, my favorite team is the Bears. So any team that beats the Bears pretty regularly, I'm not going to like them. In NBA, I love the Bulls. If you beat the Bulls, I'm not going to like you. College, I graduated from Indiana University, so any team that beats Indiana University, I don't like them. That's right, Adrian, I don't like the Ohio State Buckeyes because they whoop our ass every year in football. So I don't like them in football and in basketball. They're always stealing our talent from the state. But anyway, that's another issue. But anyway, Jalen Rose, in this documentary, him and one of his teammates, Jimmy King, made the comment that they thought Grant Hill was a bitch, that they thought Christian Laettner, a teammate, was a bitch. Taking it a step further, they said that Grant Hill and all the rest of the black players who played for Duke were Uncle Toms. Grant Hill responded with a very eloquent but still pointed letter that was published in the New York Times. And it's created a buzz of commentary. I'll just say this. I thought Grant Hill's piece was very well written. I don't know what provoked Jalen Rose or his teammate to ever refer to Grant Hill as a bitch, because Grant Hill has never exhibited any behavior that would warrant such a derogatory term, nor an Uncle Tom. I don't think a lot of young brothers even know the meaning behind that term, Uncle Tom. Here's the question that Jalen Rose, since he took pride in keeping it real, really has to be real about. What impact did the Fab Five really have? On a purely athletic level, what impact did they really have? They weren't the first all-black team to take the court in an NCAA game, period, or in an NCAA championship. Texas Western was the first all-black team to take the court in an NCAA championship game against Kentucky. So they didn't change the game as far as an all-black starting five. Now, they were one of the first teams, if not the first team I ever saw, that started five freshmen in a NCAA championship game. So I give them props for that. But that's an age issue. That's not an ethnicity issue. It's not like they played for a historically black institution like Morehouse or Howard or Southern University or Grambling. So they didn't win an NCAA championship. They didn't win a Big Ten Conference championship. So why do they deserve praise anyway? For them to take a jab at Duke or any other well-respected program, in my own personal opinion, is ridiculous. Because they didn't revolutionize the game. And I think if I have one criticism, now overall I thought the documentary was very well done. I really did. But I think if I have one minor criticism, I think Jalen and some of his teammates kind of tend to think they had more impact on the college basketball game than they really did. Yeah, they revolutionized the wearing of black socks on the court. Here's what you want me to keep it real? You know I keep it real on my show. So I'm going to keep it real. This is what the impact they had. It wasn't, again, anything to do with their athletic prowess. What the Fab Five got to do is show their ass on the court without penalty. That's what they got to do. See, if you were in high school, any inner city high school basketball game, you saw brothers showing their ass, okay? Talking trash in the face, you know? You saw that bravado being displayed. But usually on the college level, coaches weren't going to allow that. The universities weren't going to allow that. But the Fab Five, they got to, for lack of a better term, show their ass on the court. And brothers who were sitting at home, who was listening to gangster rap, loved that. They loved that. But beyond that, what did they really accomplish? They didn't win an NCAA championship. Again, they didn't win a Big Ten Conference championship. There was no player on there who has won an NBA championship. There was no player on there that was the NCAA Player of the Year. So I just think that Jalen, if he needs to learn a lesson, is that he needs to be more cognizant of the words he uses, the criticisms he expresses, because trust me, I've been a fan of Grant Hill for years, and I don't even like Duke, but Grant Hill was a classy, talented brother that never, ever, ever deserved to be referred to as a bitch, and that's all I have to say on that. My prayers are with Japan. This week they experienced a tragedy that they probably haven't experienced since the bomb was dropped on them after Pearl Harbor. A tsunami just wiped them out. Now they got nuclear concerns, nuclear power plant concerns. It's just a mess over there. My hearts go out to them. Anybody here that has friends and relatives and over there in Japan, I just feel for them. They, you know, when I saw the videos, I can't look at some of the pictures of Japan right now. It's just bad. Anyway, I'm going to take a quick break, and then we're going to get this conversation started with my guests. So I will be right back in about 3 minutes. Don't go anywhere. This is about to be a hot discussion.
Hey, I'm Dangerously. And you may have read my short story, Till Death Do Us Part, in the New York Times bestselling anthology, Succulent, Chocolate Flavor 2, presented by Zane. Well, things get even hotter between the pages of Keep Your Panties Up and Your Skirt Down. Check it out at PantiesUpSkirtDown.com. And remember, keep it dangerous.
Mode 1.
You're about to enter into the erotic zone with yours truly, Alan Roger Curry, the king of verbal seduction. This is the Erotic Conversationalist.
You got it.
This is Diana DeVoe, and you're listening to Alan Roger Curry, a.k.a. the king of verbal seduction, right here on the Erotic Conversationalist.
This is Layla Odom, and you're listening to Alan Roger Curry, a.k.a. the king of verbal seduction, right here on the Erotic Conversationalist.
This is Bella.
And this is Charlie.
And we're dancers from the legendary Score Strip Club in New York City. And you're listening to Alan Roger Curry, a.k.a. the king of verbal seduction, right here on the Erotic Conversationalist.
I'm in love with a star.
This is Alexandra Kanahakis, and you're listening to Alan Roger Curry, a.k.a. the king of verbal seduction, right here on the Erotic Conversationalist.
So I'm getting treated for my sex appeal.
This is Nikki Trim, and you're listening to Alan Roger Curry, a.k.a. the King of Verbal Seduction, right here on the Erotic Conversationalist.
This is Ambrosia Cumming, and you're listening to Alan Roger Curry, a.k.a. the King of Verbal Seduction, right here on the Erotic Conversationalist.
Ain't a little wet behind the ears to be running your mouth for. You don't really want me to run in your house.
Episodes of the Erotic Conversationalist are available as a downloadable MP3 file from www.mode1.net. All right, I'm going to go with my next caller, area code 310. 310. You are now up front and straightforward with Alan Roger Curry. What's your question or comment?
I used to date lots of women, both in high school and in college and in medical school, and people used to always ask me, you're not the best-looking guy, you're not the richest guy out there, how are you getting all these women? And essentially, the answer is actually quite simple. It's essentially having the confidence and knowing what you want to do.
Oh, thank you, Master Allen.
Ooh, say that again.
Yes, Master Allen.
Ooh, say that again.
Yes, sir, Master Allen.
I like that.
Hey, buddy, thank you so much for having me. That is easily the nicest introduction that I've ever had.
Single, lonely, confused, join me. I invite you to listen to the most informative and entertaining talk radio show on the internet for single men and single women looking to enhance their social lives, love lives, and or sex lives. Get on the phone right now and tell one or two of your single friends to listen to Upfront and Straightforward with yours truly, Alan Roger Curry, Thursday evenings at 10 p.m. Eastern, 9 p.m. Central, and 7 p.m. on the West Coast, right here on the Blog Talk Radio Internet Radio Network. Now return to Upfront and Straightforward with Alan Roger Curry, right here on the Blog Talk Radio Internet Radio Network. Welcome back. I got to give a few more shout-outs because some people have come into my room since I gave Down South Georgia girl. She's a long-time BTR enthusiast. I mean, she's like a seasoned veteran of the Blog Talk Radio family. Good to see you. I got my twin brother, relationship expert, Ryle Sims. He had his own topic of discussion earlier this evening. I didn't get a chance to hear it live, but I'm going to have to hear it on the archive. That's my main man. He's been a guest on this show. I got Miss Egypt to join me in the chat room. Miss Egypt, and I think that's about it, who's joined me in the chat room. My guest for the evening grew up in New Jersey, and she puts it right outside of New York, and I'm going to ask her about that term, right outside of New York. And she quickly developed a passion for learning and improving a level of education, earning her undergraduate degree from Clark University in Worcester, Massachusetts, an MFA in creative writing from the University of Oregon, and she has an MA in counseling psychology from Pacific University. She is a woman that spent many years vacillating between feeling sexually empowered or, on the flip side, in her own words, as a worthless slut. She chronicled her experiences as a highly promiscuous woman into various books, most prominently the one entitled Loose Girl, A Memoir of Promiscuity. Other books have included Easy, It's Not You, It's Me, and The Good Girl. And in addition to being a book author and public lecturer, she counsels teenage girls regarding the potential consequences, repercussions, and effects of a highly promiscuous lifestyle. On behalf of Upfront and Straightforward and the Blog Talk Radio Internet Radio Network, listeners, give it up for Miss Carrie Cohen.
Yeah.
How are you, Carrie?
I'm great. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, thank you for being here. Now I got to tell you, you should already know this just from the content of your book. In regard to my show, I've been doing this show since summer of 2007. And as I mentioned at the outset, the last time I had an episode that dealt with promiscuity, both male and female, but particularly female promiscuity, man, it was a very touchy, sensitive discussion. I got so many emails and a lot of feedback, and so it was an interesting show. And because this is, well, let me just ask you: do you, in your discussions about both your own past promiscuous ways with women that you talk to, say at different workshops, conferences, seminars, etc., do you find a lot of women are reluctant to indulge you in this conversation, or are they enthusiastic about talking about it?
Well, actually, well, both to some extent. I think that there is initially a huge reluctance, but after they read, for me, in my experience, after they read my book, they feel free to finally say what they have to say. I mean, I just get tons and tons of emails from women and girls, or young girls, who let me know that they feel like I wrote their story as well. Because there's kind of, you know, there's a number of sides to this issue of female promiscuity. Loose Girl is really about largely when I was a teenager and also when I was in my 20s. And so it's a little different than being promiscuous as an adult because ultimately it can be a really more so positive thing to some extent as we get older and we kind of understand ourselves better and know what we're after. But as a teenager, what was happening for me is that I was really using it to try to get something else. And I think that's largely what happens with a lot of girls. I mean, I wish it wouldn't, but that is kind of the case.
Mm-hmm. Now, if you don't mind me asking, well, I'm going to ask probably a lot of questions that are either personal or borderline personal. So,
life, there's really nothing I won't tell.
Okay. So what age did you first start having sex?
I actually didn't have actual intercourse until I was 16. But I started engaging with boys sexually around more like 12 or 13.
So when you say start engaging, you're talking about oral sex?
Let's see. Oral sex started probably around 14. So I just meant, yeah, like just kind of messing around with boys started around 12, 13.
Okay, then wait a minute. If intercourse started at 16, oral sex started at 14. Before that, what was it, tongue kissing, hand jobs?
Yep.
Okay.
All that.
Okay. Now, what period in that range, say between 14 and 16 or maybe older, would you say you started becoming, by your own definition, promiscuous?
So if I'm going to define promiscuous according to the way I defined it in my book, which is I actually refer to it the loose girl issue, then what I'm saying about it is that I was using male attention to try to get something else, so to try to feel worthwhile in the world in some way. So really, I would say I started doing that about 11, 12. And the fact that it turned into sex is almost kind of more just kind of where it went. It's just kind of, you know, inevitable based on needing that male attention. But the promiscuity was really a result of the need for male attention, if that makes sense.
So, okay. Now, I've met different types of women in my life, and I would put them kind of generally into two categories. There's some women who are promiscuous to one degree or another because they just love to fuck. And they just love dick.
Uh-huh.
And then there's another group that falls into the category you just described. It's not so much that they have, per se, an addiction to sex or that they just have this insatiable desire for dick, but rather they love the flattering attention that they get from men. So you would say you didn't really have an insatiable appetite for sexual satisfaction, but it was more so you wanted that male companion, you wanted that companionship and attention.
Yeah, really like the attention and the sense that I was desirable, which, you know, so in many ways, like, I started developing sexual feelings with puberty, as any girl does, but it got so swallowed by this other desire that I would say that I really didn't get in touch with my true, like, sexual desire, just pure physical desire, until I was well into my 20s. Because it was so wrapped up with this other need.
Yeah, because I remember reading this a few people have said a variation of this saying that men give women flattering attention in order to have sex with them, and women offer the prospect of sexual companionship to men in order to get flattering attention. So I take it you would agree with that adage and that belief.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I always want to be careful with this, because that was the case for me. I think it's the case for a lot of girls and potentially women, but it's really culturally created. I mean, I think it's dangerous, because I know for sure that girls and women have the same level of, like, sexual desire that men do, and it gets, and unfortunately, I think it's dangerous to say, for instance, that girls want love and boys want sex, because I don't think that's true. Of course, girls want sex too, but from my experience, and for a lot of girls' experience, it's kind of like because of sort of the cultural pressures, you know, I was really made to believe that that would make me worthwhile. If I were sexually desirable, if I were, if people wanted to be with me sexually, if they wanted to touch me, that meant that I was worthwhile. And it's kind of, yes, that's what happened to me. But I'm always hesitant to say that that's what all women want, because of course it is. I mean, you know, women also want sex.
Well,
but,
I know that's true. Well, you know, it's funny you mention that, and now you can lead me into some more questions. Well, first, I think the starting point I would want to get at is you almost have two factions of women out there, my observation, and I think in most men's observation, which is, regarding the whole issue of promiscuity. I was reading some materials on you, for example, where, as I said in my introduction, that it sounded like you kind of vacillated between feeling sexually empowered or feeling like a slut. And that's kind of the two factions I tend to encounter. There's some women that you could say are promiscuous and proud to be promiscuous. They don't have any shame about it. They don't have any regret about it. Their attitude is, this is the 21st century, society is changing, if I want some dick, I'm going to get the dick, and I'm not going to, you know, second guess myself. Then you have another group of women that say may engage in promiscuous behavior between 18 and 25, or 18 and 29, or 18 and 35, but then when they get to their mid to late 30s or 40s, they pretty much regret it. Like, wow, you know, what was I thinking? So is promiscuity something that you feel is, as far as whether it has positive or negative connotations attached to it, do you think that's just an individual choice, or would you say inevitably that promiscuity always comes back to haunt you if you're a woman?
Well, I mean, this is such a complicated question, because I really just don't think it's that simple. I think that ultimately, because we live in this culture where women are shamed, where girls and women are shamed for wanting sex in a way that you know, let's face it, boys and men are not. There winds up being a ton of regret. Should there be that regret? I don't know. You know, it depends. There's so many complicated ways that our cultural pressures get in the way, and the ways in which, you know, we're made to feel bad when maybe we shouldn't. I have a book coming out in September called Dirty Little Secret, which is about teenage girls and promiscuity and the loose girl issue. And one of the things I talk about in there is that there are these narratives that we have in our culture about about who girls can be when it comes to sex. So we've got, you know, the slut, we've got the virgin. Those are kind of the age-old ones, you know, the girl who wants it all the time, and then the girl who will not give it at all. And then now we've got this other narrative, which you just kind of spoke to, which I call in the book the empowered girl, who's, you know, the girl, like you just said, who just mm-hmm. feels like I can have sex whenever I want because, you know, I'm entitled to it just like boys are. And what I say about it is that I don't actually buy any of them. I don't think any of them are actually completely possible in our culture. I think that it's maybe at some point, you know, girls can reach that point where that empowered thing is there. But they're always up against those cultural pressures that girls really actually can't do that without being ostracized or made to feel bad to some extent. And so underneath all that is the loose girl, which tends to be the sort of more true story for most women, where they try to be maybe some of those things. Maybe they try to be the virgin, or they try to be the empowered girl, or they're made to be the slut. But really underneath it all, there's a girl who's just struggling to be able to be wanted in our culture, which ultimately as a girl, you get wanted in our culture through your body and through being, you know, attractive sexually. Unfortunately, you know, I mean, that's kind of largely how girls and women are made to feel worthwhile in our culture. And so then all that stuff seeps in, like you're saying, like the regret, you know, having sex too many times with men that, you know, I really shouldn't have. I realize after the fact that, you know, he wasn't actually into me or whatever, or you know, or he, you know, shares the pictures that I sent him with everyone, that kind of thing. So there's so many ways that regret happens that, you know, it's hard. Unfortunately, do I think that women should be able to be promiscuous? Of course, you know, just like men. Do I think it's that possible in our culture? Probably not, you know.
Okay, why would you say it's not possible in our culture?
Well, I think that there's too much shame given to women. There's too many ways that women are made to feel like that they are made both worthwhile and also worthless through their sexual selves. So I would love us to somehow work to build a situation in a culture where we can have a lot more sexual freedom. And certainly as women get older, they can. I mean, there's no question. You know, my book is largely about teenage girls, and my Loose Girl is about mostly when I was a teenager and in my early 20s, and that's when girls get most of the flack for it. So, but even as...
Oh, okay, wait, stop right there. You said older women cannot be promiscuous?
No, they can't. They more so can, is what I'm saying.
They more so can.
Yeah, it's easier for women and when I say older, I'm just saying, like, once they reach, like, later 20s, you know, and they start becoming more of, like, what we consider women, like women who are kind of coming to their own. I think it's a little easier for women to be trusted to know what they want. Whereas women younger than that, you know, our culture tends to like paternalize them and patronize them along with that and assume they don't know what they want. And so that's when they just become whores.
So, okay. If, let's say, and I know this, a lot of people don't like to deal with hypotheticals, but let's deal with this hypothetical. Let's say you, Carrie Cohen,
mm-hmm.
could eliminate these cultural pressures that you talk about. Mm-hmm. In an ideal society, would you like to see men and women be just totally free-spirited and as promiscuous as their heart's desire?
Yes, I would. I don't think that there's anything wrong in any way with because I'm guessing what you're getting at with that question is, do I think that women, in an ideal situation, can women be free sexually and have no regret around it? Yes, absolutely. You know, are women entitled to physical pleasures as much as men are? Absolutely. So yeah, in an ideal world, which we're not going to have, you know, let's face it, but yes, in an ideal world, that's kind of the premise that I'm working off of inside of my belief system.
Well, see, I guess here's why I have an argument, Carrie, with all due respect.
Okay.
I think all human beings and all adult human beings with the exception, of course, of doing something that's just blatantly illegal or that violates somebody else's personal, you know, preferences and what have you. I believe any adult human being can do what the fuck they want to do. There's a lot of women in the adult film industry who are promiscuous, and they could care less what anybody thinks. So, you know, a lot of women will say, well, society prevents me from expressing my sexuality the way I want to, and I don't buy that. I believe if you're a grown woman, 18 years of age or older, or 25 years of age or older, you can do whatever the hell you want to do. Here's where I have issue, and I'm going to go ahead and say some other men have issue, is that there are some women who want, in a manner of speaking, want it both ways. They want to be able to be sexually liberated and engage in promiscuous behavior, but they also want that pristine, wholesome image. And my argument is you can't have both.
I hear you, but you know, I think that what you're saying when you say the wholesome pristine image, you're talking about a sort of cultural ideal for women again that men like, you know, and of course gets absorbed by women as well. So I agree. I don't think it's possible. I don't think it's possible for women to, or you know, and men have their own kind of limitations that are put on them by our culture as well, of course. But it's not in this particular area. In this particular area, women really can't have it both ways. So I agree with you. We can't. It's sort of like not allowed. It's not allowed, and we will get ostracized. We'll get we won't get loved. We won't get, you know, all those things. So I mean, it's not, you know, personally, I mean, I don't live my life like that. I'm just saying, sort of like, what, you know, do I wish that could be possible for women and even girls in our culture? Absolutely, that they can sort of define and own their own sexual lives. I wish they could, but I don't think they can.
Now, there was a study that recently came out that said, actually, I mentioned it on last week's show, that said that a lot of older women, a lot of women, as they become older, become depressed and incapable of true intimacy if they were highly promiscuous during their younger years. What are your thoughts on that study and the results of that study?
So those kinds of studies always piss me off, and I'll tell you why. Because, first of all, largely those studies don't even define really what they mean by promiscuity. I don't really know what that means generally in our culture. And certainly with those studies, we get lots and lots of studies that use this word promiscuity, and I don't know what that means. Does that mean that they've had sex with more than 7 people by the time they're 15? Does that mean that they've had, you know, like, what does that mean? That's my first problem with those kinds of studies. The other problem I have is the correlation issue. If a woman has had a lot of sex with a lot of different men, I'm assuming that's what that means, that they've had sex with multiple partners, how is that related to their depression? Well, chances are, much more likely, there's something that led to that behavior around their sexual lives. Again, and it's all culturally built, that led them to behave in that way. Because, of course, if you are a very loved and protected girl in our culture, you're probably not going to have sex with many, many men because you were taught, you know, completely not to. You're very sheltered. It's made very clear to you how to be successful in the world, and for a girl, unfortunately, it is not to have sex with multiple men. So my guess is there were all kinds of other factors involved in that might, you know, be more related to the depression. Maybe it's that, you know, there was all kind of bad parenting going on, or God knows what, all kinds of things. But that kind of correlation, I don't see did they, you know, prove anything causal? Of course they didn't. But when they highlight the promiscuity, it just feels dangerous to me to what we're trying to do in terms of supporting our girls and women in our culture. So I just don't buy it. I just don't think that gives us really any information, those kinds of studies.
Listeners, if you want to call in and ask a question or make a comment to me and or my guests, the number is 646-478-5710. When you call in, please press the number 1, and that lets me know that you have a question asked. Like, for example, I see a few numbers in my phone queue right now, but they don't have the little hand signal up. That only happens when you press 1. Otherwise, I'll assume you're just listening for the sake of listening. But if you press the number 1, that lets me know that you have a specific interest in asking a question or making a comment. 646-478-5710. Now, Kerry, what is, since you brought up, you said, and it is pretty much a subjective term, promiscuity. What would be your definition, Kerry Cohen's definition, of a promiscuous woman?
So, I don't know. I hesitate to answer that. I used the word, so in that book that I mentioned that's forthcoming in September called Dirty Little Secrets, I used the word promiscuous to mean a girl who uses sex for sort of the loose girl purposes, meaning in order to get male attention. So it's not, in other words, to fulfill sexual desire primarily. It's primarily then to use it to get male attention and get something from it that's other than the sex. So that's how I define it. But I guarantee you that's not how those studies define it. Those studies.
Well, I mean, let me stop you there though. That was pretty vague. Come on, Kerry. I mean.
Mm-hmm.
You wrote a book about promiscuity. You can't give me a definite definition of how you, like, for example, how many partners would you have to sleep with in, say, a month or a year to qualify you as exhibiting promiscuous behavior?
See, now, I have a problem with this. And I'll tell you a little story related to why I have a problem with it. When right before Loose Girl came out, I had an interview in Marie Claire, in which you know, they just interviewed me about my book, and without me knowing they were going to, they wound up titling the interview "Confessions of a Sex Addict." Okay, which I do not claim to be a sex addict by any means, and I do believe in sex addiction, but I do not have one. So in it, they mentioned my number at the time that I had written Loose Girl. I said some 40-some-odd men, okay? 40-some-odd men or women, and that's just the actual sexual intercourse.
Okay.
So after that interview came out, there was Jezebel, which is, they're connected with Gawker.com, and they claim to be a sort of like women for the women kind of blog. But they're like, they're just mean. They're just like mean girls. And they just went on there and someone did a blog based on that interview saying, you know, how can you call yourself a slut when you've only been with 40 men and you're 38 at the time when the book was coming out? I was 38. And like, they did the math and they came up with that. So it was basically like at the most, that would be one man a year. Like, how is that make me a slut? And all these people came on and did all this commentary, like, you know, I sleep with 40 men in a month. Where's my book deal? You know, things like that. So, and Dan Savage jumped on that bandwagon too. And I mean, people were like outraged. And a few people came on and said what I felt was in support of me in exactly the right way, which is that it's not about the number, it's about the reasons. It's about the reasons behind what I was looking for with these men.
So, wait. Okay. So let me get this straight. You're saying that if I have two women and one woman slept with 5 men in the last 10 years and another woman slept with 150 men in the last 10 years, but the woman who slept with 150 men did it because she just wanted to sleep with 150 men. But the woman who slept with 5 men just wanted to kind of get attention and be noticed, then the woman who slept with 5 men is more promiscuous than the woman who slept with 150 men?
Well, I would say then the woman with five men has potentially the loose girl issues. The woman who slept with 150 men, I would assume that there might be something going on for her. I would be more likely, and I mean, this is the thing, I guess, like, are you, if you have 150 men, maybe you're more likely to be promiscuous. If you, are you more likely to be promiscuous if you've slept with five? You know, it could go both ways, is what I mean. So, I mean, this is, you know, I don't have a number to define promiscuity for what it would take, because I think that's dangerous. Because then I think you're saying that there's a certain amount of men that women can sleep with before we call them, and, you know, and then there's some line they're going to cross over, and, oh, now they're a slut, you know? I just think that I don't think that's really useful. I think it's more useful to determine, you know, what is behind the behavior.
Well, here's what I'm going to tell you from a man's perspective, being a man in his 40s. And again, now a lot of this is going to be subjective, some of it generalized, but again, I'm going to speak from how men talk. This is the kind of criteria that generally puts women in the category of promiscuous. Number one, women who regularly have sex outside the context of a long-term monogamous relationship. So basically, in other words, you're consistently indulging in a high degree of casual sex. A lot of men will cause a lot of men to label a woman promiscuous. A woman who has two or more sex partners during the same period of time. So like say from January to June, she's fucking four different men, as opposed to fucking one man from January to March, then another man from April to June, then another man. She's got two. A lot of men will refer to that as promiscuous. And finally, a woman who's in a relationship or supposed to be in a serious relationship, like she has a serious boyfriend or she's married, but she's fucking around regularly on her husband, fiance, boyfriend. That is promiscuous. So, yeah, a lot of it has to do with just pure numbers. Some of it has to do with in what context the type of relationship you have. Like, for example, most guys, if they meet a woman and a woman has sex with, say, 15 guys, but all 15 of those guys were guys that she considered a quote-unquote boyfriend, somebody serious, a lot of men won't say that's a promiscuous woman. I preface all this by saying it's subjective. One man could meet a woman, and if she tells him she slept with 10 men in the last 10 years, he'll say, oh, that's a hoe. Another man, it may take 50 for her to say 50 men. Another man, it might take for her to say 100 men, and so on and so on. That varies from man to man to man. But I think every man knows in their mind their own definition of what would provoke them to call a woman promiscuous. Like, I don't think anybody would argue that if a woman works in the adult film industry, she's promiscuous. Would you argue that any woman who works in the adult film industry is not promiscuous?
Probably not. I mean, I probably would assume that she would fall under that category. But again, like, I would encourage all men to examine their definition of promiscuous, because like everything you said, for instance, I'm wondering, so is it okay with men for women to have casual sex? You know, does that make her a whore? Does that make her a slut? Does that make her promiscuous? Is it okay? You know, and like what do they feel for themselves? If they feel like it's okay, I mean, is it okay for men to have casual sex? Are they then promiscuous? You know what I mean? Like, the double standard is so alive and well in this way. And I just think it's worth examining, you know, because I know, like, a lot of your listeners, you're examining kind of dating and the single life and sex and so forth. And so so it's worthwhile examining where their notions of promiscuity about women in particular come from, and whether they're fair, Because of course, there's a line, and absolutely, I think that that women are way more prone in our culture, again, because of those ways in which women are set up for this, to be using sex in ways that are probably bad for them, because certainly there's no support in our culture for women to be sexually promiscuous, and whereas there kind of is for men, you know. So I think it's worthwhile definitely for men, you know, I mean, in speaking to your male listeners as well, it's worthwhile for them to examine that.
Well, see, here's I guess, where I'm having a little bit of problem, and but judging from some of the comments I see in my chat room, some of my chat room listeners are having the same problem, is that I can't really tell if you're critical of promiscuous behavior by women, or if you just feel like it's unfairly criticized and women should be allowed to be promiscuous.
All right, so, well, let me say this, because, you know, I'm a memoir writer. So, I mean, something that people don't always get about those of us who write in that way is that, I mean, I'm not a judger. Like, I don't judge people. So for me, it's not that, the answer to that first part is I'm definitely not critical of them, ever. Because if that's the case, usually there's something going on internally that is leading them to this behavior. And that, you know, whatever's going on internally plus the sort of, you know, the pressures outside of them and ways in which they're made to feel, it's what I refer to as, like, it's sort of culturally cued behavior, where they're shown, you know, we're shown endless images of sexy women, what women are supposed to be, and then as soon as we are that way or act that way, then we're immediately criticized, you know, as being sluts. So there's, I'm not critical of them, no. I think that, yes, that there's a lot of criticism put on them that is,
So do you encourage women to be as promiscuous as they see fit?
I wouldn't say that either. No, I wouldn't say that either.
Okay, see, that makes it sound like you're playing the middle from both ends, though, Carrie.
If I could define it best, I would say this, is I would love it if women could have ownership over their sexual development and their sexual identities. That's what I would like.
What do you
that
mean?
That might sound
that?
A little vague. So meaning whatever they would be able to feel comfortable doing naturally, whatever they would want to do and feel comfortable doing, that's what I would like women to be able to do. If they don't want to have sex with more than, you know, if they want to have one man and one man for the rest of their lives and never experiment beyond that, then, you know, God bless them. What I would love is for it not to be so completely out of women's hands. I just feel like girls and women don't own who we are sexually, because it's so, you know, people immediately call you, that's a hoe, that's a, you know, you're a whore because you slept with, you know, this many men. Or I would love it if women could have a way to engage with their sexual selves where they were in charge of it. And I don't think that's possible. I mean,
Why don't you think that's possible?
I think that the pressures are way too big. I think that the images coming at us and then the critiques coming from all around connected to that are too loud and too big, and I don't think it's possible for girls or women to kind of even really know what they want sexually in our culture. And certainly, I mean, teenage girls.
So in other words, you're saying that women, more so than men, allow society to dictate how they should behave.
Yeah, well, and I don't think it's allow. It's just that it does dictate it. I mean,
no,
don't
they
really
allow it, because I mean, nobody has a gun in their head. I mean, if you allow, anybody who's sensitive to criticisms like whore, slut, if they allow those criticisms to provoke them to modify their behavior, then they're allowing other people's opinions, other people's expectations, other people's criticisms to dictate how they behave. See, that's contrary to my own book. I have a book called Mo One, Let the Women Know What You're Really Thinking. And it's actually written for men. And what I basically tell men is, if you want casual sex, then be upfront and straightforward about it. Lay that on the table. And one of my underlying messages in my book is, don't give a fuck what other people think, what society thinks. So my attitude is, if you're a grown-ass man and you're a grown-ass woman, then you got to make the decisions that you personally feel are beneficial to you and are rewarding to you. Now, if that means that she feels that promiscuous behavior is rewarding to her, is gratifying to her, then by all means, she should pursue a promiscuous lifestyle. But if a woman was to find out from, say, other older women, more experienced women, that later on in life, promiscuity is going to have all these negative consequences and repercussions, then that's when she should maybe think twice about it. But I'm not buying the notion, sorry, Carrie, from you, that society, quote-unquote, prevents a woman from owning her sexuality, because I've had women on this very show, such as Nina Hartley, who's an adult film industry legend, that will argue just the opposite. She's all her life, Nina Hartley has owned her sexuality. She is promiscuous, and she makes no apologies for it. She could give a fuck what her family thinks. She could give a fuck what society thinks. She could give a fuck what somebody at the local church thinks. She fucks who she want to fuck, when she wants to fuck them, and she don't give a damn. And see, I respect that. I respect women who say, I'm going to be promiscuous. Fuck you if you label me for it. Fuck you if you criticize me for it. But I do have problems, again, with the women who kind of like waffle on the fence, and they kind of one foot in the promiscuous lifestyle, but on the other hand, they don't want to be labeled, they don't want to be criticized. To put it more frankly, they want to exhibit the behavior of a promiscuous woman, but they don't want any of the subjective criticisms and connotations that come along with it. And that is when guys like myself think that women are full of shit. Because, I mean, you got to, if you want to own it, I'm saying own it.
But listen, you are talking about a woman who is in the sex industry. What if you are a woman who is, who is in the corporate world? It's very different. That, you know, the woman you're talking about, that is great. She's built her life around it. What if you don't want to build your life around it? What if you want to live in the very sort of, you know, strict confines of what it takes to, you know, to work sort of inside the line? And what if you also want to get married? You also want to find your love someday, you know? It's very different. It's very different.
That's what I'm asking you, though. Well, explain to me how it's different. If a woman wants to get married, Lena Hartley's married. She's married. Uh-huh. They're women in the adult film industry. But to get away from women in the adult film industry, I know women who have been promiscuous that are married. They found a guy that loved them for who they truly are and was willing to. Matter of fact, my guest literally last week, well, he's not married, but my guest from last week, he is in a serious relationship with a woman who was highly promiscuous. He's a classic example. He's a guy, he doesn't hold promiscuity against women. He has no criticisms of women being promiscuous. Most of his girlfriends have been strippers, adult film industry stars, and other swingers, other promiscuous types. And, I mean, you're telling me there are women who are in corporate America who still are able to fuck who they want to fuck if they want to fuck them.
Listen, I don't think you and I are disagreeing. I don't think you and I are disagreeing here. All I'm saying is that there are different experiences that those women are up against. It's just something that they have to examine in themselves. It's something that I would hope. All I'm saying is when those women are called you know, are called sluts or whatever it is, mm-hmm. I hope that they will have the wherewithal among themselves to be able to see that that is just a cultural construct that has nothing to do with who they really are.
Okay, well, see, this relates to what I've been asking you. I'm asking you, one of the questions I'm asking you is, are you a woman who encourages women, in a manner of speaking, to say, be who you are, be who you want to be, regardless of who is going to criticize you or label you? Is that kind
Absolutely.
Of your role with women?
Absolutely, yes.
Okay.
Yes, no question. Absolutely.
So when you talk with women and you counsel women, you say, hey, if you want to fuck 25 men in a year, that is your choice. Don't worry about who is going to pass judgment on you, criticize you, or label you.
Well, yeah.
See,
I mean,
you signed the contract. It's
very humbling, but yeah, I mean, that's, in my head, I'm thinking, this is what I want for you. Yes, that's what I want for them, yes.
You said in your head, but you're saying you don't express that.
Well, that's not how counseling works. Like, it's just not that simple. Of course, they know that. They know that for themselves. Most women know for themselves, well, I should be able to do this. You know, I want to be able to do this. But they're usually up against all kinds of shame that they've internalized or ways that they've made themselves feel awful. And so we've got to work with all that stuff. That's the only thing I'm saying there.
So I guess my secondary question, since you already answered the first half of my question, I guess the second half of my question would be, is there ever a time when you try to dissuade women from engaging in promiscuous behavior?
I have not had that experience where I have dissuaded anyone from doing that. No.
You've never...
Let me tell you
this. You've never, like in your book, Loose Girl, I haven't read it, but Loose Girl, Memoir of Promiscuity, you do not in any way try to send out a message that being promiscuous is a bad thing.
No, I don't, and that actually gets misinterpreted a lot. Like, it's interesting. I've gotten fan mail from, like, born-again Christians saying, thank you for sending this message that, you know, girls should wait to have sex till they're married. And I'm thinking, that's not what I'm trying to say at all. No, that is not my message, even remotely. In fact, I don't support that. I think teenage girls should find ways to experiment sexually as much as possible. So no, that is not my message, even remotely, no.
Now, how long have you been married?
So I was married for 9 years, and we separated, and now I have a new partner.
Okay.
Yeah.
And, okay.
Yeah, that's not confidential information. It's not like breaking news or anything, because I have another memoir that comes out in November, actually, about my autistic son. And that kind of tells the story of what led to separation, and actually is not some of the Loose Girl stuff is in there. I never cheated, but really it's about that. It's more, way more complicated than that. It's about
did your ex-husband have any problems with your promiscuous past?
No, he didn't at all. No, and we're still really, really good friends. In fact, the reason we separated is because we came to understand that we're just really, really good friends.
So in other words, he you look at more like a play brother than a guy who gets your pussy wet.
Yeah, I would say that's exactly accurate. Yes. Vice versa for him, so.
You said what?
And vice versa for him. It's not just me.
Oh, and you get his dick very hard.
I did not get his dick hard.
Oh, you did not get your ex-husband's dick hard.
No, that's what I'm saying. We just
wow, that's
really
deep. So how did y'all two end up married?
What? We went for 5 years without having sex.
You went for 5 years without having sex?
Yeah. And did not cheat that whole time, and it wasn't until we separated. I mean, as soon as we separated, you can bet your ass I ran out there and had sex. But we did not, we just, you know, we were just, we were, He's like a wonderful brother. He's my brother in many ways. You know, we really have like more of a brother sister relationship.
Well,
and
he didn't have a good dick though.
I'm sure his dick is wonderful for another woman. It just didn't work. We just didn't have that chemistry. We just did not have that chemistry, and it really wasn't there. And then what happened for us with having children, and one of them had special needs. It just really like we didn't have that chemistry that was really like the important glue that keeps you together in that way during the hard times.
I'm going to take a break. Listeners, when I come back from the break, if you want to ask a question or make a comment, call in, press number one so that I know you want to talk, 646-478-5710. And before I go to the break, I don't know if you've heard any of my previous shows, but there's two things I'm going to ask of you, Miss Carrie. One, my female guests know my favorite word is fucking. So you have to say, Alan, there is nothing wrong with good fucking.
Okay, that's fine. I'll say that.
Go ahead and say that.
Oh, Alan, there's nothing wrong with good fucking.
Let's say it again.
Alan, there is nothing wrong with good fucking.
Now, the title of my book is called Mode 1, and I want you to stretch out the O's and say it like Mode 1.
Mode 1.
Very good.
Yeah, right? I know.
Mode 1. Alan Roger Curry.
Mode 1. Up front, straightforward.
Mode 1. Alan Roger Curry.
Listeners, I'll be back in about 3.5 minutes or so. I'm going to take an intermission break so my guests can get a swig of water. Again, if you want to call in, 646-478-5710, press the number one.
Hey, I'm Dangerously. And you may have read my short story, Till Death Do Us Part, in the New York Times bestselling anthology, Succulent, Chocolate Flavor 2, presented by Zay. Well, things get even hotter between the pages of Keep Your Panties Up and Your Skirt Down. Check it out at PantiesUpSkirtDown.com. And remember, keep it dangerous.
What's up, folks? This is Alan Roger Curry of Upfront and Straightforward and Mode 1 fame. And if you're a music lover, I urge you to listen to Madison Media Radio. It's not just music, but it is music with a purpose. Right here on the Blog Talk Radio, Internet Radio Network.
Mode 1.
Do you think that guys, to one degree or another, have to play the role of the bad boy to attract women, or they just need to remain who they are and just, you know, be patient?
No, they need to combine their game. They need to go in with an attitude that I'm going to be a gentleman, but I'm also letting you know that I'm attracted to you. You know, I want to kiss you. I want to hold you. I want to, you know, I want to take you out. I want to date you. You know, if you think I want to get in your pants, you're probably right. But at the same time, I like you. I like you. I want to see you.
You know, there's more single women than married women in the United States.
Oh, really?
It's over 51%. Yeah.
There's more what?
Okay. There's more single women than married women in the United States right now. First time ever in history.
Mindset is correct. Somewhere there's a woman that's balanced, that's God-focused, that, you know, she gives because she wants to give, not because she's trying to hook somebody with her giving, but she values herself. She recognizes her good qualities, acknowledges her bad qualities, and this is the person that's balanced and ready to be in a healthy relationship.
Thank you.
the listeners know there's a letter in my first book, Letters to a Young Brother, Manifest Your Destiny. It's called Finding Your Swagger. In fact, it's so funny. I just got a letter from a young brother that he read my book, and it's changed his life. And he also put it in, he said, and you know what? I found my swagger, and now all the girls like me like you said they would. I was so tickled by that, yeah.
Oh, man, you gotta love it.
Single, lonely, confused, join me. I invite you to listen to the most informative and entertaining talk radio show on the internet for single men and single women looking to enhance their social lives, love lives, and or sex lives. Get on the phone right now and tell one or two of your single friends to listen to Upfront and Straightforward with yours truly, Alan Roger Curry, Thursday evenings at 10 p.m. Eastern, 9 p.m. Central, and 7 p.m. on the West Coast, right here on the Blog Talk Radio Internet Radio Network. Now return to my interview with book author Kerry Cohen Hoffman on Upfront and Straightforward with Alan Roger Curry right here on the Blog Talk Radio Internet Radio Network.
Welcome back, welcome back. As I predicted, I said we would have a most interesting conversation anytime the topic of discussion is male promiscuity versus female promiscuity. It's going to provide the basis for an interesting conversation, a provocative conversation, and even a sometimes contentious conversation. And if you just tuned in, you're going to have to go back and listen to the archive so you can listen to what my guest, her name is Kerry Cohen, and she is a book author and a licensed psychotherapist, and she's written actually 4 books. The most notable one would be called Loose Girl, A Memoir of Promiscuity, that she opens up and chronicles how she has kind of vacillated between feeling sexually empowered and feeling like a worthless slut, which is her own words, not mine. Then she has 3 other books, one called Easy, which is, I want to say, more a novel. It's Not You, It's Me, and The Good Girl. Now, let me ask you, well, first of all, before I ask you a question, let me see who else just joined my chat room. Too bad, so sad is in my chat room. I got Self-Guided in my chat room. I got London Lesna in my chat room. I got Jiggy79 in my chat room. Beautiful Butterfly is in my chat room. I got Ann San P in my chat room. I got 50 and Retired in my chat room. Welcome to the discussion. Now, as we end it going to break, I'm going to have you repeat once again, Kerry, tell my female listeners, say, ladies, there's nothing wrong with being fucked really good.
Oh, yeah. Ladies, there is nothing wrong with being fucked really good. That's the truth.
Say that again.
Ladies, there is nothing wrong with being fucked really good.
Good girl. So, we've been having this most interesting discussion. If you just tune in, listeners, where me and Kerry have kind of been at odds with each other, is that in some respects, it sounds like she's encouraging women, like she just did a few seconds ago, to, if they want to get some good dick, to go after the good dick and not worry about the criticisms that may come, the labels that may come. But on the other hand, I was kind of criticizing Kerry because it sounded like she was blaming society and probably more so men in society for making women feel bad about their sexuality. And what I was challenging her on was that women can't blame it on society. They got to be
the woman who they want to be. Now, but let me ask you this question. What made you, because this is a bold move of yours. Most women don't even, I know women in relationships who don't like to talk about their sexual past, let alone to even remotely think about talking about it in the public domain. What made you, what provoked you to want to put your thoughts and your feelings and your experiences on paper and publish it as a book?
After so many conversations with so many women and then also in counseling teenage girls and hearing that they all had the same story and yet nobody was talking about it. Like they were all, everyone I knew and so many of my, like pretty much all of my female friends and then pretty much all of my teenage girls that I was counseling, that all of them were struggling with these feelings they had around what they had done sexually or what they, you know, what they'd been doing sexually and all the feelings they had. And it occurred to me that nobody, that they all thought that they were totally alone with it. So for me, so much of writing Loose Girl was about putting my story out there so that girls and women could really just feel less alone with that story. And that's what I hear. I mean, I just hear endless responses of people saying, thank you, you know, that's my story too, and I felt like I was the only one, and it means so much to see, you know, to see myself on the page. So that's really why I did it.
Hmm. Now, are your other three books, any of the other three books, nonfiction, or are they all three fiction?
Well, those are all young adult novels. They're all fiction. And then I have two books coming out in the fall that are both nonfiction.
And what will they touch on?
So Dirty Little Secrets, which is what I was talking about earlier, is actually about the Loose Girl issue. So it's an examination of the Loose Girl issue. The subtitle of that book is Dirty Little Secrets, Breaking the Silence About Teenage Girls and Promiscuity. And then the other book is called Seeing Ezra, and it's a memoir basically about parenting my autistic son, but it's also sort of, you know, a continuation of what happened once I got married and the ways in, once we had kids and the ways in which my marriage sort of fell apart.
Now, how many children do you have?
I have two.
Is one of them a girl?
Nope, two boys.
Two boys, okay. Well, then let me ask you a hypothetical. Let's say you had a daughter that was, I don't know, 13, 14, and she said, Mom, I want to start sucking dick and I want to get fucked. What's your response?
I highly doubt that a 13 or 14-year-old girl would say that to her mother.
I beg the difference. Now, I would say it's probably rare, but I've actually met women in my life who told me they had that type of relationship with their mother where they spoke frank. They might not use those exact words, but they were able to be frank with their mom.
Yeah. No, okay. Now, being frank is one thing. So I have to say that I will, at that point, I will probably have a stepdaughter. I will probably have a stepdaughter who you know, I really hope will be able to come to me and be frank with me about what her hopes are and what she would, you know, how she would like, that she would like to, you know, explore and all that kind of stuff. And so, I mean, my whole sort of philosophy around parenting a teenage girl and supporting her sexuality is that I think that parents, that mothers should answer all questions as honestly and truthfully as they can. They should not share anything really about their own lives, you know, any of their own history, but certainly, like, as honest as they can, they should provide as much access to condoms as they can, meaning make them available and don't make your kids come and get them from you. Have a drawer where they can come and get those condoms, because that's the most important thing, is that they stay safe physically. And then that there be like a lot of open communication about the emotional side of it. And so that's why, for me, the question is, what is it you want out of this? You know, what makes you want to do it? And you know you're ready. A girl knows she's ready when she wants so much, she wants it so much that she can't help herself. Okay, then you're ready. And then it's like, let's talk about all the emotional sort of things that come up around that. What are you going to want out of it? How are you going to feel if he does this? That's the kind of conversation I hope to have.
So going back to something you said at the beginning of the conversation, I guess if you were talking to a daughter, if she wanted to get fucked for the sake of enjoyment and satisfaction,
you would be supportive, but if she wanted to give fucks just for the sake of getting male attention, that's when you would have problems with it, correct?
That's kind of correct, yeah. I mean, I thought that I would have problems with it, but I would definitely, like, really, really want her to talk it through with me, yeah. Yeah, I would really want her to, like, get really clear about what it is she was wanting to get from it. Yeah, that's pretty accurate, actually.
Now, see, somebody in my chat room agreed with me, so you're wrong, Carrie. You said most women wouldn't talk to their mothers. A few people in the chat room were saying that they know a lot of women who talk frankly with their mom. Now, fathers would be where the surprise would come. I don't know too many women that talk about sexuality with their fathers in a straightforward, frank manner. But with their mothers, I know quite a few women who told me that they've had.
So do I. But you said when a girl comes to you and says, I want to get fucked and suck some dick, it's very different than, Mom, I'm thinking about having sex. It's very different. I'm just saying, I was just making fun of the way you said it. I agree that lots of girls, and I hope they will be, open and frank with their parents, with their moms especially. Yes.
Well, again, most women probably wouldn't use, but then I would have to say, I have a friend that she told me that about probably 4 years ago. She said her daughter at the time was, I don't know, 14 or 15, and she came in her bedroom and asked, she said, Mom, when's the first time you sucked a guy's dick? And she said she was kind of caught off guard by the question. And she said, what, you thinking about doing it? She said, yeah, there's this guy at school who really wants me to suck his dick.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, she said her daughter, she used the language. Well, anyway, I'm just wanted to say that does happen. Now, so the women who come to you for counseling,
yeah.
I'm trying to clarify here. Now, are these women who are currently feel like they're promiscuous, but they don't want to be labeled, or are they currently promiscuous and they want to change? Or, I mean, what are they seeking from you? What type of knowledge and wisdom and counseling are they specifically seeking from you?
Yeah. So most of the women who come to me, what they're feeling really torn up about in their lives is that they feel desperately unloved and worthless or it's more like kind of deeper feelings and a lot of it and they don't know how to stop using male attention and usually sex as well to try to feel better about that part of themselves. So that's different. That's a little different. And this is what I've been trying to kind of clarify is that, there's sex, there's straight up sex, and there's like sexual desire, and then there's this sort of, what I call sort of the loose girl syndrome or the loose girl issue, which is that where a woman feels.
Carrie, let me correct you.
Oh.
You can't say sex anymore on the show. You gotta say fucking.
Okay.
Say they're straight up fucking.
Okay. So when a girl is fucking purely because she's trying to feel better about herself and it's not working, that's the loose girl problem. And that's when they're coming to me.
When they're fucking and they're say that one more time.
Okay. When they're fucking because they're trying to feel better about themselves for something that fucking is not going to make them feel better about themselves.
So in other words, almost like using dick as a drug.
Yep. Yeah, but not for sexual desire. It's not about fulfilling sexual desire. It's about using it to feel like you matter in the world, or like you're loved, or like you're lovable, or like you're desirable, or like like you mean something, which is different.
See, one of the criticisms that men have, either very mildly or sometimes more harshly, of women, is that a lot of women tend to attach feelings of love to just good dick. Whereas men, we rarely, there's a few men that might fall in love with a woman because she got some good pussy, but men know how to separate feelings of love from feelings of lust and just the feeling of good pussy. Now, some guests on my show actually have explained, though, that there is a difference that women have this chemical or hormone called oxytocin that once they get some good dick on a regular basis, it naturally makes them want to bond with a guy. And, I guess that would lead me to my next question, which would be, if a woman, say, has this chemical oxytocin, which is going to naturally want to bond her to a man, should she be wary of having too much, you know, casual sex because she's probably going to fall in love with every good dick that's in her pussy?
So there is some, there are some studies that, suggest that. I would be wary of them because I think we just don't know enough about this chemical. And again, I always worry because those kinds of studies, I just feel like, are, you know, is this just more kind of like trying to, keep women from being able to have like sexual freedom, you know, and fuck who they want, you know. So
you're able to separate love from good dick.
Yes, and also I can bring them together.
Say yes, Alan, I'm able to separate good dick from love.
Okay. Yes, Alan, I'm able to separate good dick from love.
Say it again.
Okay. Yes, Alan, I'm able to separate good dick from love.
Say it again.
Yes, Alan, I'm able to separate good dick from love.
Mm-hmm. So you've never had a man say, damn, Carrie's acting like she all in love with me, and all I did was dick her down real good. You've never had that situation?
That is largely what my situation was throughout the book, Loose Girl. It's exactly what you just described, was my inability to separate.
Was your inability?
Yeah, and hence why I kept you know, going. Then I went to the next man hoping he would love me, and then going to the next man hoping that would turn into a relationship. You see what I'm saying?
Listen, you just confused me again, Carrie, what you've been doing this whole show. Now, it sounded like you just a few minutes ago said you're able to separate love from good dick.
I am now.
Oh, you said, okay, you are now.
Now I am, yeah.
Okay, but when you were younger, you were not able to separate love from good dick. Okay, well then let me ask you this. Would you say most young women are similar to how you were when you were young?
I would say that I get a ton of email from young women telling me that they felt like I did, yes, that they feel like I did during the book. So, yeah, that they can't separate it. Mm-hmm.
And how do you help them separate it?
I help them, so in a few ways. One is I try to help them see the ways in which, I know you don't like to hear this, but the ways in which that our culture sort of sets girls up to be in that situation where they use sex and being sexy and getting male attention to feel like worthwhile in the world. So I help them do that. I help them examine the ways in which they don't feel worthwhile and, you know, look at ways in which, you know, they can kind of work with that so that they're not constantly trying to put something out in the world to fulfill that for them. So those are kind of the two things, ways that I work with that with them. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so let me ask you this. Have you had a woman that, say, anywhere from 18 to 24 that came to you, and when she first came to you, she was making a mistake of every man that she got fucked by, she was falling in love with him. But by the time she went through whatever counseling sessions and workshops that you had for her, whether it was a few weeks later, a few months later, or a year or two later, she was able to feel more in control of her sexuality and able to separate the feelings of wanting to be loved from just wanting to be sexually satisfied.
Absolutely, yes. I totally, totally help women do that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And also to be able to have, you know, to fuck.
Say it again.
To fuck for the right reason. Whatever they are for that person.
Say it again.
That they would get fucked for the right reasons.
Say it again.
Yes, Alan. That they would get fucked for the right reasons for them. So, and that might include, like, you know, fucking someone because you love them.
Say it again.
Fucking someone because you love them. Because a lot of these women, you know, a lot of people who mix up the love and sex thing too much during their life.
You can't say sex. You said, because they're fucking.
Right, who mix up the love and fucking thing throughout their lives, they, a lot of them, wind up in situations where they can't, once they're in love, they don't want to fuck the person they're in love with because they've mixed it up too much and they kind of can't, now they can't, you know, with real love, they can't be that vulnerable with that person. So that's the whole, you know, there's so many challenges that come as a result of it that I have all sorts of clients dealing with those sorts of things. So there's that too. But yes, I mean, I would like to think I help all of them.
Now, it's amazing that you wrote this book. about how you were looking for love through fucking and that you love to be fucked. But yet, you were able to go 5 years without fucking ex-husband?
No, isn't that crazy? My friend was saying I should write a book next called Tight Girl. Yeah, it's crazy, right?
That's amazing.
Well,
That's amazing.
Well, I should say during those 5 years, there were also two pregnancies, a lot of nursing. I mean, there were certainly enough months in there that could maybe whittle down those 5 years a little bit. But yeah, I mean, it's pretty crazy.
Wait. See, now you're really confusing me. You say you went 5 years without fucking. How did you get pregnant if you weren't fucking?
Oh, the last time we had sex was the time I conceived my second baby. I'm sorry, so one pregnancy and a bunch of nursing. So that's it. Yeah, you're right.
With the time you got pregnant with your second kid, you stopped fucking for 5 years.
Yep.
Wow.
Isn't that crazy?
Listeners, if you want to call in with a question or a comment, 646-478-5710. Got about 11 or 12 minutes left in the show. I'm going to take my final 3-minute break, but when I get back, I'll have another 2-3, maybe even 4 more questions for my guest, Kerry Cohen. Again, 646-478-5710. I'll be back in roughly about 3 minutes.
Do you want to let loose? Yep. Do you want to vent on the issues all the time? Do you want to express your view? Yes, sir. Then sound off. This is your host, Harold L., okay? Inviting you to join me on Blog Talk Radio with the Sound Off Now show. That's what's up. Real life, real issues, real talk, okay? Uncensored. Join me on the SON Network Monday and Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern for some of the most controversial issues and forums as we simply sound off. I'm there. Come join us on Sound Off Now, where nothing is off limits. That's what's up. www.blogtalkradio.com/sound-off-now.
Mo One.
I never really looked at myself as a quote-unquote bad boy, at least not in all regards. I mean, I ain't never robbed no bank, and I ain't never skipped 2 weeks of school. So in terms of just various facets of my behavior, I wouldn't necessarily call myself this. But yeah, when it comes to sex, I've definitely been that guy.
Because
I will push a woman's boundaries.
You know what? To be honest with you, I think most women are waiting for a man to do that. Most women want a man to do that. Most women that are coming up in the day and age where a woman is supposed to be the good girl has this idea that a man is going to bring that out of her, and she's hoping that he will. Unfortunately, a lot of men, I won't say a lot of men, but some men have no idea what they're doing. And so they're not able to get that out of her. And then everybody's frustrated. She's frustrated. He's frustrated. Nobody knows why it's not working. But women are like, go ahead. Like, blindfold her and just take her wherever you want to take her. She's waiting for a man to command that. So she says she can't, you know, in some cases, be that free to say, okay, blindfold me and take me wherever you want to take me. And it's because in some way she's afraid of where you might take her. You know, depending on what the relationship is like with him and how much she trusts him. And in other cases, she just doesn't know how to say that herself.
No woman wants a man that can't lay it down in the bedroom. Period. And, you know, women, we go through this, oh, I want to be held and I want to cuddle and I want to talk. Yeah, we want to do all of that. But when it comes down to it, we want to be climbing off the ceiling just like everybody else does.
Single, lonely, confused, join me. I invite you to listen to the most informative and entertaining talk radio show on the internet for single men and single women looking to enhance their social lives, love lives, and or sex lives. Get on the phone right now and tell one or two of your single friends to listen to Upfront and Straightforward with yours truly, Alan Roger Curry, Thursday evenings at 10 p.m. Eastern, 9 p.m. Central, and 7 p.m. on the West Coast, right here on the Blog Talk Radio Internet Radio Network. Now return to my interview with book author Kerry Cohen Hoffman on Upfront and Straightforward with Alan Roger Curry right here on the Blog Talk Radio Internet Radio Network. Welcome back to the last few minutes of tonight's episode of Upfront and Straightforward. Well, I told you this was probably going to be a doozy, and it has. There have been times in the conversation when me and my guests have agreed on some points, but there's been times when we've been diametrically opposed. My guest, in case you just tuned in, is a woman, a well-respected book author, and she's a lecturer and a counselor. She's a licensed psychotherapist. Her name is Kerry Cohen, and her book is entitled Loose Girl, a memoir of promiscuity, and looks like I have a phone call from area code 845. Area code 845, you are now Upfront and Straightforward with Alan Roger Curry and my guest, book author Kerry Cohen. What's your question or comment?
Yeah, what up, Alan?
What's happening? Who's this?
This is Mike from Philly.
Mike from Philly. How you doing, Mike from Philly?
Good, hi, good. Matt, how you doing, Kerry?
Good.
I got a question. There's this girl that I know, and we recently reconnected through Facebook.
Okay.
An old high school classmate of mine.
Okay.
She, we've been talking, but it turns out she slept with over 500 men. And she's bipolar, all right? This is a true story. So she admitted that she slept with over 500 men, and she's bipolar. And I'm actually considering pursuing her.
Why?
Because she admitted to me that she's a squirter, and I've never been with a squirter.
What do you think about that, Kerry?
I mean, what do you want me to say? Like, what do I think about it?
He's saying this woman has a bunch of, has had a bunch of sex partners, and she's bipolar, and she's a squirter. Should a man, I'm just asking you some questions. Should a man pursue a woman like that?
It depends what he wants.
Depends on what he wants.
Yeah. If he, and we don't know, those are her, that's her statistics. We don't know enough about her. I mean, we don't know if she, who knows, maybe she's like, really works on herself and she, has, maybe she would make a great partner. I don't know. But, I think that based on her statistics, I would say that if Mike wants to pursue her to, get laid, that's then.
To what?
To get laid.
No, to what? To her?
To fuck her. That's what he should do.
Mm-hmm.
He's 501.
Now, what are your thoughts generally on, thank you, caller, for calling in. What are your thoughts on polyamorous dating, like swinging, couple swapping? Is that something you endorse, indifferent towards, don't care for, what?
So it's something that I probably would not be able to do because I'm, way too jealous, and I just don't think it would work for me. Intellectually, it sounds like if people can do it, if they can agree, as long as there's honesty in the, among the people, then that sounds great. I mean, it sounds like a really positive thing as long as everyone can be really honest and not, you know, get, and not have jealousy really get in the way. I think it's a really hard thing to manage to do. But, yeah, I mean, would I endorse it, like, as a, you know, does Kerry Cohen, you know, and this message is endorsed by Kerry Cohen? I don't know about that, but just because, I mean, it depends. It's different for, it depends if people can do it. Not everyone can do that, you know. For those who can, I think it's great, yeah.
Well, speaking of endorsements, though, you already have endorsed. You've told my female listeners that if they really want to be fucked real good, they shouldn't worry about criticisms of labels. Isn't that correct?
That is correct.
Okay, tell my female listeners that again.
Okay. Ladies, if you want to get fucked real good, you should absolutely go ahead and do that. Go get
my, guest, thank you, Kerry. Appreciate that. My guest last week, Johnny Saporno, he said something interesting. He said that women are sometimes in a no-win situation. If they love to have sex with multiple men, if they want to have sex with multiple men for free, they tend to be labeled sluts. And if they want to have sex with multiple men who want to wine and dine them, offer them materialistic gifts and financial favors, they tend to be called whores. What is your thought on that comment of his?
I did not know that there was a difference between whores and sluts. That's totally news to me. I didn't know that. I didn't know that there was a difference. I thought whores and sluts were the same thing.
In your defense, I would say a lot of people probably think those terms are interchangeable. But for a lot of men who get, let's say, technical,
mm-hmm.
No, there's a difference, I would say, with some men, because, yeah, basically, some men would agree with Johnny, who was my guest last week's definition. They think of a whore more so as a woman who fucks men to get something out of them, like, you know, a financial favor type deal, Like, I'll give you one example myself. I never called a woman a slut simply because she had sex with a number of guys.
Uh-huh.
I tend to categorize a slut as a woman who is in a relationship, like married, and she blatantly is cheating on her husband. That's my person. That's my own Alan Rodgers. That's the time when I call a woman a slut. Yeah, if a woman is married or she's leading a guy to believe that she's in a monogamous relationship with him, but behind his back, she's blatantly cheating on him. That's when I tend to use the S word. Let me see. I have area code 215. 215, you're now upfront and straightforward with Alan Roger Curry, my guest, Kerry Cohen. What's your question or comment? 215?
I'm afraid I can't talk because I'm really sick and my voice is bad.
Oh, yeah, right.
Yeah.
What's up, Don Calypso?
Yeah.
Now, I know you've been attentively... Now, see, Don, I'm glad I got you on the phone. I'm going to ask you a question, and I don't want to necessarily embarrass my guest, but me and her have kind of gotten into this at least lighthearted debate during the intermissions that I told her that she's been waffling on a few things. Now, wouldn't you say that some people in the chat room felt like she wasn't taking a firm stance one way or the other, that she was kind of playing the middle from both ends?
Oh, boy. That's a whole other show.
I want you to be real. Just answer me.
Didn't
people in the chat room feel that way, though?
No disrespect, but yes, your guest was waffling. Because especially when you spoke about, as far as what the research has shown, the neurochemical link between a woman having sex with partners where the sex is pleasurable, there's orgasm, and, you know, with how the oxytocin bonding happens. And she said that, she thinks that this research is basically in a way to suppress female sexuality. I'm like, no, that's BS. That's just biology. It's not about that there's an agenda. It's a question that we're hardwired differently. Neurochemically, women have more oxytocin. Women have, you know, women respond differently to certain hormones. The way women's brains are hardwired, the amygdala, where they store their emotions, is linked to the hippocampus. So when they have that good sex with those guys, not only is there that chemical bonding at the oxytocin level, the memory stays there longer. All those things play a role, so that if a woman's been that promiscuous with that many different partners, especially when she's had Mandingo, Big Dick Bob, and Jasper St. Jock blowing her back out and knocking the uterus and ovaries out of alignment, then, and she has that body memory, when she meets Mr. Goodbar, who may be, you know, a good guy, a good husband, but does not have the same prowess, it's going to be damn harder to stay faithful when you got the memory of those other guys, even if they may have not been good in any other ways, which is why I could partly explain why our guest had a 5-year drought with her husband. Because if she says he didn't really, you know, make it happen for her, I'm pretty sure, though, in her all of her experiences, there was somewhere along the line that oxytocin bonding with Big Dick Bob, with Jasper St. John, Commit Dingo, and whoever else, and this is probably one of the things that may have led, among other things, to that 5-year drought.
Well, two things. Carrie, I got to let you know, this is one of our more outspoken, loyal listeners. This is Don Calypso. Don Calypso, the women are going crazy over your voice in my chat room. I can't have you call anymore. They're saying your voice sounds sexy than mine. I'm going to start playing.
My throat is killing me right now because I told you I'm sick as hell, man.
But what do you have a specific question or comment for Carrie?
No, not at the time. I need some chamomile tea. Get my blood pressure down.
Okay, well, thank you for calling in. And let me see here. 703, you just listening or you have a question or comment?
Oh, I'm just listening.
Okay, thank you. 410, you just listening or got a question or comment?
Just listening.
Okay. See, Carrie, you got all these people just listening.
I know, that's so nice.
Because they love the way you say fucking.
Yeah, that's probably it.
Of course, that's it. 240, you just listening or you got a question or comment?
I'm just listening.
All these people, they love listening to Carrie. Did you ever see the film Chasing Amy?
You know, I never saw that. That's the one about the lesbian, right?
Well, you know, yeah. That's funny you would put it that way.
Yeah, I never seen it. This is just like word of mouth, so I may have it wrong.
Well, see, that's why I didn't initially want to see this movie. It's by a director named Kevin Smith who did this film called Clerks. And that's what I thought it was, basically. Mm-hmm. It stars Ben Affleck. Mm-hmm. And it starts off, yes, being about that. This woman, he has a crush on this woman who is a lesbian, but she's more so transitioned into the lesbian. It's not like she was like some women will say, from the time I was born, I knew I was a lesbian. Whereas her thing was she had been hurt by men so much. Almost kind of similar to your situation where that you talked about how she was looking for love and wasn't getting it back. So she became a lesbian. But Ben Affleck, first, I always like to give spoiler warnings. If you haven't seen this movie, I'm giving spoiler warnings because I'm telling some of the plot lines. So if you plan on seeing it, you might want to close your ears. But what happens, Ben Affleck becomes very persistent, very charming with her. But anyway, actually what the movie, the meaning of the movie deals with is he wins her over. They start dating. And then he goes to like this like convenience store, like a 7-Eleven type store one day, and runs into two guys who went to high school with his girlfriend. And they're like, you're dating, I forget her name in the movie, Alyssa or something. They're like, you're dating Alyssa? Oh, man. In high school, she was a freak. I mean, she would suck all the guys' dicks. We used to have threesomes and foursomes with her. And Ben Affleck could not handle that. And it ends up fucking up their relationship because he can't handle it. So, in your experience, would you say a lot of women will make an attempt to keep their sexual past a secret or keep their number of sex partners totally confidential because for fear that their new boyfriend is not going to be able to handle it?
I think less so now. I think that's definitely in the past. Women have been really wary about that. But nowadays, it's kind of cool. Like you were saying, like there's like the empowered thing. Like a lot of women feel like like it's cool to be a slut, you know. It's cool when I've you know, fucked a whole lot of guys, and they know how experienced I am, and also it's something they can kind of hold over men to some extent. It's like a way to, it's like yet another way to get attention. That they were whores. So I don't know. I would say nowadays I think that a lot more women are just going to be honest about that. You know, whether for good or bad reasons, I think there's a lot less hiding about it. Definitely a lot more talking about it, just in general, everywhere, and certainly in relationships too. So yeah, I think less so. I mean, I think, you know, that movie came out that you're talking about. That movie came out like in the 90s, I think, and a lot has changed. A lot has changed, I think. There's definitely been like. There's a lot more that needs to change, and definitely a lot more.
So wait a minute. You're saying you think men are. Wait, you're saying that you think less women try to hide their sexual past from men?
Less so than in the past, yes. Definitely.
Less so than in the past. Okay.
Yeah, less so than in the past. There's definitely been that shift. I mean, Sex and the City actually changed a lot of that. That was kind of, you know, something that came up in our culture that made talking about sex, that for girls talking about sex and being more sexually promiscuous or, you know, and all that kind of stuff definitely made it a little more something that we can talk about. There's begun to be some change, absolutely.
Now, somebody asked me to ask you in the chat room, are you saying that it's cool to, I know you don't like labels, but they're asking, are you saying it's cool to be a slut?
Do I think it is? No, not necessarily.
Oh, see, that's a vague response. Not necessarily. What did you mean, not necessarily?
Well, again, I know you keep calling, you know, I know you're calling this waffling and like other people are calling it waffling. But I mean, are you, if you are a woman who is very comfortable with her sexuality and sleeps with a lot of men and wants to sleep with a lot of men and feels like that and doesn't care what, you know, what other people might say about that, then yes, that is cool. That is cool. I agree with you.
Yeah. I've been saying that the whole show. Yeah. If a woman, I've always said, if a woman wants to fuck a lot of men,
yeah,
and she has no apologies about it, and she's no attempt to hide it, I respect that. My criticism is of the women. Well, since we use the term, women who waffle. I don't like women who want to engage in, you know, free-spirited, uninhibited, promiscuous behavior, but as soon as they are labeled or as soon as they are criticized and scrutinized, they want to start blaming that on men and or society instead of just saying, fuck you all who have a negative opinion on me. I don't care. I'm going to do what I want to do when I want to do it. I don't like that point, and I don't think most. I'm gonna go ahead and speak for a lot of men I know. Man, we don't like it when women try to blame that on us. Like I've had women say to me, like, "You men won't allow us to be the free spirited women we want to be," and I tell women all the time, I don't prevent you from doing shit.
Can I say for the record, just really quickly for the record, I never ever during this interview or ever in my lifetime really have ever blamed anything on men. I do not blame men for anything. I think we're all in this together. So that's not when I was talking about like culture and like sort of the ways in which like we all work together to create our culture, I mean everybody. I don't mean men. I don't think in fact women are probably the bigger culprits than men. So no, I would not. I just for the record, because I know like there's a lot of like, you know, like anger you said in the chat room about me like waffling or blaming things, and I definitely don't blame men.
Well, I appreciate you saying that, and specifically I appreciate you saying that. You don't blame men because a lot of women do try to lay guilt trips on men. Oh, and I also appreciate, and you probably already know this. We're going, listen to us because, see, this is how power, even though, see, here's the good and bad. Even though you've been criticized by some of my chat room members,
they're enjoying this conversation so much that I had a chat room write me a message saying, Alan, can you please extend it just a little bit longer? Please, please, please. So as you realize, we've gone a little bit over the time I told you it was going to end, so I appreciate you hanging for a little bit longer because I did actually have a handful of more questions. But, yeah, they're loving the conversation. Okay, let me ask you this. This is going to be a tough question. Do you think there's been a lot of articles, and I know you say you don't like these studies and surveys and, you know, journalistic observations and what have you, but there's been a lot of commentary provided over the last few years that marriage has diminished generally for both men and women, but particularly for men. So my question to you is, do you think that the high prevalence of premarital sex and casual sex and promiscuous sex has contributed to the diminishing appeal of marriage?
No, no, not at all. Not at all. No, I don't think that has anything to do with the problems we have in marriage. Not at all.
Okay, well, since you say not at all, if I had to ask Carrie Cohen, give me two or three factors that you believe. Well, first of all, do you believe that marriage has lost some of its appeal? Over, say, the last 20, 30, 40 years.
What do you mean by lost its appeal? Like,
well, a lot of people, in a nutshell, have been saying that in the early to middle part of the 20th century, that all men and women were psyched up and enthusiastic about finding that special someone and getting married. Whereas it said nowadays, a lot of people are like, you know, marriage, I can take it or leave it, you know.
Yeah.
I'm not, you know, I don't care if I don't get married before I leave this earth.
So, well, here's my sense of it, is that I think that, you know, you can love someone and marry them or not. I found for myself that when you make the sort of legal commitment that happens with marriage, there is something that happens sort of internally where you feel a lot more responsible to that relationship and to the person. And I'm a big, like, I love marriage. I'm a proponent of it. You know, even as mine didn't work out, I totally plan to get married again. I feel like, you know, marriage can be a really positive thing. People who decide not to get married though, more power to them. If they don't want to, that's totally fine. I think marriage, a lot of people get married to have kids, and I think a lot less people are having children. I think that's largely something that's happening. And I think, too, people are just really scared because our statistics are so big about how much divorce happens. And so many people, you know, their parents divorced, and people are just scared. They're scared about, you know, whether they feel like they can do it. But I don't think it's anything that, like, is happening necessarily in our culture. I just think people are really, like, questioning right nowadays whether marriage is the end-all be-all. That's all. I just think people are just really questioning, you know, all the sort of values that we've assumed were just set in stone and were true. I just think people are kind of opening their minds a bit more now.
So in other words, I don't really like to deal with hypotheticals, but ask you hypothetically, let's say, I don't know, it was a sweeping, this fad swept across the nation of celibacy and abstinence. Do you think if the vast majority of people in society were practicing abstinence and celibacy that they would be more likely to get married or not really?
No. But I also know that there are people who think that they shouldn't have sex unless they're married, so then they get married. But big surprise, they also divorce them because, you know, they just got married to have sex to them. So I mean, no, does that work to make marriage work? No, definitely not. I think, in fact, people should figure out what they want sexually and figure out who they are sexually before they get married so that they know, you know, who they're going to be with. Sexually, for, you know, who they're deciding to be with potentially for the rest of their lives, if not for a large majority of their lives. So, so no, I don't think that's the answer. And also, there's, you know, I know you, I'm not against lots of study. It was just that one. There's a lot of studies about promiscuity in particular that that bug me, but there are a lot that I also, I mean, obviously I'm a therapist. I study psychology, and I definitely understand how studies are done, and I'm actually a big proponent of a lot of the research that's out there. So one of the things that we know based on what we see from research is that abstinence actually doesn't work, or where they make commitments to abstinence with kids, when little kids do that, that in general we find that they don't stick to it, there's just as much incidence of STDs among those who took that abstinence pledge as those who didn't. So
now, since at the beginning of the conversation, when I told you I was going to ask you a few personal questions, you said, oh, I don't mind, I'm pretty much an open book, and obviously with your books, you are an open book. I'm going to put you on the spot and ask you, since my friend and listener, Don Calypso, brought this up, because we've talked about this on a few other episodes. Would you say that because you probably had a lover in your past that really just fucked you really, really good, just made you just come all over the place, and no disrespect to your ex-husband, but if you're able to go 5 years without him, wouldn't that suggest that he couldn't compete with the memory of some of your better lovers?
No, I totally disagree with that. No, because when you marry someone, or even just when you're in love with someone, it's like, that stuff kind of gets transformed. I mean, you know, it wasn't that we didn't have good sex when we had it. We did. It's just that the basic, like chemistry to even want to really have it wasn't there, which is different than having good sex. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, the person I'm with now, we have good sex, but also I, like, actively desire him. And it's not something you can really quantify. That's like attraction. Who knows what that really is, you know? And with my husband, it's like I had some attraction from in the beginning, but it was never that really like wild, crazy attraction that I actually have now. But it has nothing to do with like how good the sex was or how good he was in bed or anything like that. Not at all. I totally disagree with that. No. I mean, it just didn't ring true for me at all.
Interesting. Okay. So, you have two sons, and if you don't mind me asking, how old are they now?
7 and 5.
Okay. What if one of the two, if not both of them, when they're, I don't know, 14, 15, 16, want to read your book? Is that going to make you feel awkward? Would you allow them to read it, or?
Yeah, so, well, first of all, it's funny because I've had this conversation many times, and actually this has come up in interviews a lot, and the first thing that comes up a lot is, like, if you're a son and your mother wrote a book about her sex life, are you going to want to read it? Probably not. So it's very likely, actually, that they're not going to read it. However, if they do read it, I'm totally fine with them reading it, because I didn't write it to basically like glorify my sex life or be like, look at me, you know, sex, sex, sex. I wrote it in the hopes of clarifying what it's like to be, for a lot of girls, what it's like to be a girl. And so I imagine that it would educate them a lot about the girls in their lives. So I would totally be fine with that if they wanted to read it. I think that if they did, we should definitely discuss it. If they do, also it's like ages and ages ago, so it's like they don't have to really associate it with me now. It was from back when I was their age, really, you know. So yeah, I would be fine with that.
Caller, I don't see an area code, but it says the username Lucid. Are you on the line?
Yeah, what's up? We're just looking to talk with Bret Hart.
I didn't understand what he said.
I didn't either.
Huh.
Say it again?
Well, we had a, looks like we got a bad connection.
This is really laggy, Liam.
That's just, I don't know, he's on some kind of crazy cell phone. Now, what is your thoughts on today's? Now, this has been a frequent discussion on my show about the quality of high school and college level sex education. What is your general thoughts? If you've had enough time to really, you know, observe it or get feedback from others, do you think in this country we provide teenagers and young adults with good sex education on the high school and college level?
No, we totally don't, because largely what sex education is in America is like anatomy, and it's basically anatomy and don't do it. It's basically what we provide them. Every once in a while, too, there's like some information about birth control and STDs, but that's about it. There's no talk about what it's really like to have sexual feelings. There's no talk about the emotions that go along with, you know, sexual curiosity and having your first sexual experiences. There's no talk about masturbation. There's no talk about any of the things that I think would actually be useful to teenagers.
Okay, now since you brought it up, masturbation. I've had that on the show, that the sex toy business is a multi-million, bordering on a billion-dollar business. Do you think a lot of women at a young age should start playing with their pussy in order to know what makes them come and know what excites them?
Yes, I do. Yes, I do. I do.
Okay, tell my female listeners, say, ladies, you should play with your pussy.
Yes, Alan. Ladies, you should play with your pussy. Yeah. Ladies, you should play with your pussy.
Okay, girl. Now, what were you going to say? You sound like you're going to add something on to that.
I was only going to say, like, you know, just like boys. I mean, of course, boys and girls should do that, absolutely. And what's more safe in terms of sex than having sex with yourself, than fucking yourself, sorry.
Say it again.
Fucking yourself. It's the safest sex there is, and it's probably some of the more satisfying sex. So, yes, and especially as teenagers, that's what they should be doing.
Mm-hmm. Now, see, that's what I call a strong stance, Carrie. I see, I'm going to give you, and you're going to get mad at me for teasing you, but I'm going to give you the listener. See, now you winning some fans over, because that was a strong statement, and you didn't waffle. You said emphatically and definitely that the young women should play with their pussies, and that the young man should stroke their dicks, huh?
Mm-hmm. Yep, absolutely.
Okay, okay. Now, do you have any workshops coming up, any particular projects, special events, anything you want to let my listeners know about?
Like I said, I have a book coming out in September they should look out for. Definitely, if people are willing, I would love everybody to buy Loose Girl, to read Loose Girl. I have availability on my counseling roster as well. If people want to, so
now, do you do phone counseling?
I do. I do phone and Skype counseling. So I have a lot of, in fact, a large majority of my, right now, actually, all of my clients are not local, and we do Skype and phone. So if people are interested in that, they could go to my website. If they're interested in anything more about me, they can go to my website. It's www.carrie-cohen.com, and it gives you a way to contact me there. It also has that would keep people up to date with anything going on. I don't have anything in terms of workshops coming up right now. I also teach memoir writing, and people, any new classes that are starting with that would be on the website as well.
Now, you say you have a book called Deep Dark Secrets?
Dirty Little Secrets.
Now, what is that about again?
It's about the Loose Girl issue. So it's about specifically for teenagers, although it does speak to some extent. It has a chapter devoted to when women grow up after sort of being loose girls in their lives. So, and it does provide some approaches to like how to work with some of those issues to move beyond them and so forth. So that's nonfiction.
Okay. Now, finally, I think this is worth reiterating. You, another part of the interview where you were emphatic is that you said you had problems initially confusing love with just good fucking, but you were able to transition out of that. So tell my female listeners again that they can learn to separate feelings of love from just wanting to be fucked really good.
So, Alan's listeners, please know that you can separate feelings of wanting to be loved with those very natural feelings of wanting to just get fucked.
Oh, say that again.
You can separate those feelings of wanting to be loved with those natural feelings of just wanting to get fucked.
Say it again.
Okay. Yes, Alan, I'm able to separate good dick from love.
Yeah, that was cool. Well, hey, I'm going to tell you, we've had, you know, we were at odds at different points in the conversation, but overall, I do think this was an informative and enlightening conversation. I wish you nothing but continued success. I will be keeping tabs on your upcoming projects. I think I'll have to read Dirty Little Secrets. And, yeah, it's been a pleasure having you on the show.
Thank you so much, Alan. It totally was. It was like a two-hour long.
this is actually, see, you should feel special. This is only about maybe 5% of my episodes over 2 hours.
Huge thank yous to your listeners. That was awesome. And I really appreciate the interest, even if they hate me.
Nobody hates you. I've been teasing you all night, but I didn't read anybody in the chat room that said, you know, I hate this woman, or I don't. They just felt like, you know, at some points you weren't, again, real firm and strong in some of your opinions. But towards the latter part of the interview, you did express a lot of things very firmly and very strongly, and I like that. But, yeah, again, continued success to you. Listeners, next week I will have a woman, again, who was a pioneer in the field of adult erotic entertainment. Her name is Candida Royale, and she will be here next week. The following week, again, I will not have a live show. I will have another installment of the Erotic Conversationalist, which some people felt like parts of this interview should have been on the Erotic Conversations, because on that podcast program, I'm known for saying, say it again. But anyway, have a great weekend. Enjoy the NCAA tournament. I'll see you next Thursday.